Hello again, and welcome to another episode of the Jeff and Josh podcast, Bear and Parrot, Human and Other Human. You know who we are at this point. We speak to you just about every week. Not a super regular schedule. It's whenever we're both free, and you know, we are really busy. I was just telling Jeff, the next 45 days from when we're recording, we have two books and two issues due, and then it will be just about Christmas time, but it is a lot when you say it out loud. And there's going to be other stuff, the winter meetings.
Rule 5 draft,
which is part of the winter meetings. I'm sure there'll be trades and other stuff that will pop up. But you know what? Right now, we're not talking about all those things. We are talking about what we always talk about at this time. We are talking about the Arizona Fall League. And Jeff, you are the luckiest. Well, you were the luckiest man alive last week. You are less lucky right now, because last week, you were in the Arizona Fall League. As a matter of fact, you were staying just steps from where I stayed. I was in the lovely Courtyard Wrigleyville West, and you were in the Sheraton Wrigleyville West, which is just a Matt Mervis home run or two away from Sloan Park. So now you're back. You're back in the Eastern Time Zone. You're back in your Bat Cave here. Just tell me, like, how was the experience? A week down in the Fall League in Mesa, seeing a whole lot of really fun prospects.
Yeah, it was a great week. I was able to double up the first 3 days I was there. Friday morning was a little busy. Plus, it gave me a little bit of time to cut some video, write some reports, do some of the stuff that I had to do. Then went and saw Carson Wisenhunt for my last regular season game on Friday night. Followed it up with the Home Run Derby on Saturday over at Sloan, and then did the same thing, walked over for the Fall Stars game, was there for all the BP. You can see all those videos, I think just about every player, up on my Twitter. And then, you know, obviously took in the Fall Stars game, which was pretty good. You know, I've got to see some star hitters, look like star hitters. All the pitchers came in that I wanted to see. Saw some good stuff, a lot of good fastballs in that game. And I'm kind of returning here now. Got in late last night, and just sort of thinking about all the different arms that I saw, plus all the good food I ate. Ate a lot of good food while I was out there. Good Mexican, some good Colombian, a lot of In-N-Out Burger. You know, I mixed it up.
You know, it's funny. Like, I think that was my 9th or 10th Fall League. I've never been to In-N-Out ever. I took former BA colleague and former Diamondbacks area scout Hudson Belinsky there once, but I really just dropped him off or waited while he ordered food. Because as anybody who knows me knows, when I go out there, I eat Mongolian grill as much as possible. My record is 16 helpings of grill in 14 days, which is truly psychopath behavior, but is also par for the course for this bear. I love it. It loves me, usually. And it brings me back to my college days when I, again, psychopath behavior, would schedule my classes around when the University of Oregon's Mongolian Grill opened at 11 a.m. So I'd go 8 a.m. class, 9 a.m. class, 10 a.m. class, first in line at grill, have my lunch, and be done for the day. But that's a small diversion from the Arizona Fall League. So you said you saw all those games out there. You saw the Fall Stars game. I guess the easy question is, you know, with all those games combined, who was the most impressive? Let's start with pitcher that you saw.
I think there's a few guys in the running, but the guy that I walked away from most impressed by was probably Brian Wu, right-hander from the Mariners. He pitched for Peoria when I saw them. Trying to think who they played that day. Was it Scottsdale? No, whatever. I'll look again. It was Salt River. Pitched really well, three innings. Fastball is definitely legit. 93 to 96 on that. It's a really good operation, really streamlined, repeats really well. The secondaries are kind of fringy to maybe average. Nothing really stuck out there, but just from somebody that I had maybe watched on video a few times, this season in high A, and then getting an opportunity to see him live, see how the stuff plays out of the hands. It's a really good fastball. It's a really good operation. And, you know, if those secondaries tick up even a little bit, you know, I think just based on his movement, how he throws, I think there's going to be consistent command there going forward, particularly of the fastball. So I would say he impressed me the most. And, you know, Emmett Sheehan was really good, but I've talked about Emmett Sheehan a few times. Mason Miller was the other guy that's right there for me. Probably the loudest stuff I saw in AFL. It's a legit 100 mile per hour fastball. He sat 99 to 100 miles per hour, touched 101 on my gun. He's got sort of a power upper 80s, you know, cut slider type deal. That was a really good pitch for him. And he showed feel for what I would call a power changeup at 90 miles an hour, which, of course, when you're throwing 100, 90 is perfectly acceptable as a velocity separation off of off of the heater. So Miller was really good for me. Threw three perfect innings, struck out five. That was a good one. So yeah, kind of came away really impressed by Miller and Wu. I thought Sheehan was good. And there's some other arms too that I thought were, you know, good right there. Tink, of course, but I almost don't even count Tink because we knew Tink was great.
You know, it's funny you bring up both Sheehan and you bring up Sheehan, who struck out 10 today. This is Tuesday, the first day of the last week. Weeping slightly here for a second. The last week of Fall League. He struck out 10 today in his final, I assume, his final start. And Mason Miller struck out 6 over 3, I believe, shutout innings. So those two gentlemen are going strong. And I will note too that Sheehan's teammate, both on Glendale and in the Dodger system, Jose Ramos, was 4 for 5 and was a double shy of the cycle. So good for Jose. Here's the podcast shout out. Those two guys really stuck out. I think those are standout guys for other people in the industry too. It's not names that I haven't heard. Those aren't surprising names. I know I highlighted Miller as one of my sleepers to watch, basically because I saw on Las Vegas's Twitter feed, like, hey, he's throwing 100 miles an hour. About half his pitches are 100 miles an hour. That seems like a pop-up guy, or not even a pop-up guy. That seems like a guy to watch to me, because we had him ranked in the middle of the A's system to start the year, and then he got hurt and missed most of the year and wasn't healthy and pitching again until after our final re-rank. And in between, the A's made a ton of trades and added a bunch of dudes. So he got bounced out during the year. Needless to say, he will be back in the A's 30 somewhere, maybe even in the 10. That list will be written by former BA employee and current BA freelancer Mark Chiarelli. So look out for that in the coming months. I don't know if you get the book before you'll get the 10, but we do have East Division, Central Division, West Division, and obviously the A's are in the West Division, so you'll see them later in the winter. But those are two really interesting arms. How about some hitters that you really enjoyed taking a look at there, Jeff?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple guys that do stick out. One that comes to mind immediately is Will Wagner. Saw Wagner go deep for a game-winning homer on Wednesday night in surprise against Glendale. Hit it in the bottom of the eighth inning. Proved to be the decisive game-winning shot. But I'm just impressed with the bat-to-ball there, the approach. He's got really good takes. One of those guys that, you know, he's ballsy enough to take some stuff that you're kind of like, wow, he took that. And it rewarded him. And I think there's more, he's gaining impact in the sense that he's hitting the ball harder now than he did at the beginning of the season. There's been progress in that regard. I know that the Astros have been working with him on that just from like a player development, player plan sort of standpoint. So, the dev plan seems to be tracking, because I thought Wagner was pretty good. I don't know what he is defensively. There's it's not a great body. He's not a runner. It really is a bat, heavy bat first profile. So take that with a grain of salt. You know, if we're talking about big names, of course, Jordan Walker was good for me. Mason Wynn was good for me. I thought Jackson Merrill, who we've talked about before, probably the best hit tool, maybe the best swing if I had to reward or award the best swing to the any prospect I saw last week. He would certainly be there.
You're missing one. Come on.
I'm missing one. I'd say Matt Mervis, Heston Kerstad are both right there. Kerstad was really good for me. I was impressed just with the approach. There's a lot of bat to ball there. I think there's going to be easy power, particularly to his pull side. Mervis, I like the swing. I think he's a 50 first baseman kind of right out the box. And there were a few scouts I spoke with last week that felt the same way and sort of confirmed my thoughts on that. And then I got to see Eduardo Julian in person.
There he is.
And that's yeah, I was saving that one to the end. So, you know, the approach is good. He hit a homer for me. It was wind aided, but he did hit a homer. You know, I think there's certainly some bat to ball skills there, probably average power. He's not good defensively. I was hoping to see a little bit more at second base to make me feel a little more confident that he could be an average defender at second. I don't think that's the case. I had some scouts that put 40s, 45s on in there if they were optimistic, which is okay. You can get by with that. I don't know how that's going to work necessarily with the new shift rules and a little bit more demand on second base in terms of range and just, you know, being able to make plays. I don't even know if it's a range thing so much as it's more like actions and just feel for the position at times. So, you know, I got to see Nick York as well. I don't know. I'm still kind of waffling on that. I got a game where he had three hits. It seems like the contact there, it seems like he's leaning back into sort of that part of his profile. I don't know so much about the pact and the power. It's a really high load in terms of where his hands set up. It's a long way for the bat to travel. That kind of worries me a little bit with him. But, you know, I do think there are, you know, field to hit. There's some barrel adjustability as well. So I don't know if I'm all in on the sort of Nick York comeback. I'm absolutely back in on the Heston Kerstad comeback. I think that the bat is absolutely for real. I don't have really any questions about that at all. The other guy I'll throw out there too, Carlos De La Cruz had a phenomenal game in front of me. He went 4-for-5, hit a homer, had a triple in that game as well at Glendale. He hit the ball into the winds, but it was not wind aided. That was a legitimate homer, I think. Played some center field. You know, I don't know about him in the outfield, but you know, when he's hitting and he's making contact, there is massive impact there, as you would expect from someone who's 6'8".
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We're talking about him, and obviously there's a couple big boys in prospect land right now. James Wood with the Nationals.
Spencer Jones
with the Yankees. There's a non-prospect in the big leagues named Aaron Judge, who's 6'7", also with the Yankees. We're seeing a little bit of a resurgence, not a resurgence, but a lot of more taller prospects than I remember. There's these giants among men who are...
Jordan Walker is a big boy too.
Yeah, Jordan. Yeah, he's huge. I had never seen Jordan Walker before at all. I'd never been in the same room with him, anything like that. You were at the Futures game. So when I saw Jordan by the batting cages, like, that is a large human.
Yeah, it's funny. He makes he's always next to Mason Winn. So he makes Mason Winn look small. And Mason's not that small. Mason's bigger than I am. He's 6'1". He's a legitimate, you know, 6'1", whatever, you know, 210 pounds. And he's always next to Jordan. And Jordan's 6'5", 6'6", or whatever, and extremely long. So, you know, he makes everybody look short.
Yeah, and to your point about Heston Kerstad, he's the Arizona Fall League total base leader. He's the extra total base leader with 59, extra base hit leader with 15. Your boy, Eduard Julien, is 22 walks. You're playing the hits here, man. Julien leads with... you mentioned two guys who are 0.001 apart in slugging percentage. Will Wagner's at 681 and Julianne's at 682. OPS is Julian. Hits are Kierstad. Doubles are Kierstad. So, you know, you're not scouting the stat line, but if you were, you would have picked the right ones there.
Yeah, the other guy I'll throw out there too, that kind of had some bad luck, but I thought like he made a ton of good barrel contact and it was really easy. And I don't have any concerns with him as being a high strikeout guy. And that's Andy Pages. Pages just backspins everything. Now, sometimes that's to his detriment as there are a lot of fairly easy fly balls to the warning track, a lot. But it's not for a lack of contact or power. It's certainly there. I thought the approach was fine. He's going to be a player, it seems, that's probably going to be somewhat captive of, you know, whether balls are falling for him or not. But I do think he's going to be an above average offensive player. I like Pages. I got some questions about the body and where he projects on the defensive spectrum. It looks like left field would be optimistic. But, you know, I also don't want to write it off because I didn't see him play a ton defensively, but he played right, he played left, he seemed like he was fine. Arm seemed like it was good, but he's interesting. I definitely like Pages. I like the swing, and like I said, I think he's going to hit. I think if you watch him for three or four games, you just see he doesn't struggle to make contact, he's rarely fooled, and there's definitely a loud barrel you know, in there.
It's funny. You know, I just flashed Jeff a message on a piece of paper that I had standing next to me. And I looked at it and this is a fall league lineup card from 2018. So that's just what I have lying around my living room right now. And with that lovely anecdote, we are going to take a quick ad break right now. And we're back. So, you know, we've talked about your hitters you've liked. We talked about your pitchers you like. Any final thoughts on the Fall League, the experience? How about the wild ending to the Fall League Fall Stars game, which saw Tink Hentz facing Jordan Walker? Because there are no rules in the Arizona Fall League, baby.
Yeah, the American League had run out of pitchers in the Fall Stars game, as they always do in the Fall Stars. It seems like the home team ends up winning the game. But they play the bottom of the inning just to get, you know, another set of at bats, some more pitchers in that haven't pitched yet. So what ended up happening was they brought on some National League pitchers, the final of which was Tink Hentz. He faced Andy Pages. Pages got a hit with two outs. So that set up the matchup that I think everybody wanted to see in the Fall League. And that was Tink Hentz versus system mate Jordan Walker. On the first pitch, Walker took him deep. It wasn't the first pitch, right? He wasn't.
It was the first pitch.
He took him deep to the opposite field, but as far back as he could and to keep it in the stadium. And of all people, Heston Kjerstad jumped up, stretched, and made an off-balance play, but one that proved to be, I would say, probably the best defensive play, non-Mason Wynn throw of the game.
Yeah, I was going to say you missed the Mason Wynn throw. You know, Justin Martinez impressed with his changeup of doom.
Yeah, it's a splitter, man. That thing is nasty. That is a nasty.
I was watching the broadcast, and I think he got four or five straight whiffs on stuff.
He did. He got, I believe, I have it written down over here if I pull up my notebook, but I believe he got, let me look at it, because Christian Chamberlain was the only one that looked really good. He got three or four whiffs, and he got whiffs on that fastball against Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, and then he got Julianne to swing through twice in a row.
Yeah, Martinez, I thought, was the one that got Julianne.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
Martinez got two really good guys in a row. I was watching the broadcast like a hawk because, you know.
Yeah, Martinez started out with Ronnie Simone.
That's right.
At 96, looking 86 and 87. So that's the splitter whiff. 98 mile per hour whiff for Julian to start the at bat. Hit him with 86, another really ugly whiff. Took 87 and then hit him again with the splitter at 88 for a really ugly whiff. That was a really good inning. That was one of the standout innings, my opinion. And the other one I was mentioning was Christian Chamberlain. He got two fastball whiffs on a three pitch strikeout of Zach Veen, followed it up with a whiff on 93 miles per hour against Jackson Merrill. He ended up eventually getting Merrill on a curveball and then struck out Andy Pages on four pitches, started him curveball, fastball was fouled off, and then hit him with a final curveball to lock him up. So it was a really good inning for both those guys. Abner Uribe impressed as well. He was like 99 to 100, really swaggy. He probably should have struck out Luis Angel Acuña, but he got a nice call for a ball four, a generous call. And he came back out and struck out Nick York, I believe, on three pitches, and then pointed over to Acuña and was like, "You got lucky," and then like walked off the mound. It was pretty fun. He's a guy that I wasn't all that familiar with, but was fairly impressed with. Another couple guys to throw out there: Thad Ward pitched really good for me on Friday night. He was the best pitcher I saw, including Carson Wisenhunt, on Friday night in Scottsdale. And then Hagen Danner pitched in that Peoria Salt River game. He came in late for Salt River when they were down. Let's see, Blair Calvo, followed by Hagen Danner, followed by Tink Hentz. It was a nice 1-2-3 of some stuff. And the way they had pitched earlier in that game, they should have started with those guys potentially. But he was really loud, up to 98 miles per hour with a banger. If he's healthy, I think he could be a guy that could potentially help the Blue Jays in their bullpen next season.
Well, that's pretty much all we have for today, as the Zoom timer ticks down to the end of this podcast. We are only minions in the world of Zoom, because I forgot to sign in as Carlos Collazo, who, you know, he has the fancy unlimited Zoom plan. So I have to be myself and live within my own limits, which means we have 3 minutes and counting to go. And I'm not going to take all of them just fumfering like this. Thanks, Jeff, for getting on the horn with me tonight. And I'm sad for you that you're back from the Fall League, because the Fall League is the greatest of all leagues. Oh. Pay attention to our site. I've already put my Yankees top 10 out there. I've got Marlins coming up Thursday. He's got the Blue Jays, you know, next week, and there's lots more to come. Kyle Glazer, fresh from the World Series, is in the Fall League right now. He is probably, frankly, getting ready to watch Kumar Rocker right now. He's probably T-minus 30 minutes away from Rocker Fest 2022, the final version. And then he'll be there for the play-in game, which is a new feature of the Fall League, and the championship game. And then that's it for us for the Fall League. It's just a matter of, you know, getting out your calendar and counting down. Let's see if I can do this. 46 weeks or so until the next Fall League. That's keeping your eye on the prize, baby. For Jeff in Massachusetts, I'm Josh in North Carolina, bidding you adieu. Thanks for the download. Bye-bye.